cart from Mrs. Nesbit.
I need it, he yelled. Give it to me.
Get your own, she yelled right back at him. This is war, man. I was afraid the man thought that was exactly what it was. I didn't know what else to do, so I rammed my wagon into his back and caught him by surprise. That gave Mrs. Nesbit just enough time to pull away from him. I raced away also and didn't look back. Compared to battles in the parking lot, the store almost seemed comfy. I went to Health and Beauty Aids and found it fairly empty. I guess the rest of the world hadn't realized they were going to need vitamin D. The great thing about ransacking painkillers was I knew I was getting more than $100 worth of stuff. I filled the cart to overflowing, stopped one more time at canned goods, and then over to baked goods, where I put boxes and boxes of cookies on the cart's bottom shelf. I even remembered Fig Newtons, since Matt likes them. This time I found Mom unloading her stuff in the car. She'd bought enough tuna fish and salmon and sardines to last us for 2 lifetimes. The back of the van was as much a madhouse as the store, since there weren't bags for anything. Mom was trying to unload as best she could, but things kept falling out, and I spent as much time grabbing stuff from the pavement as Mom did unloading. A man came over to us. He had a wagon, but he looked desperate. Please, he said. Please help me. You have a wagon, Mom said. I need you to come in with me, he said. My wife is 7 months pregnant, and we have a 2-year-old, and I need diapers and baby food, and I don't know what else. Please come in with me so I can use your cart. I beg you, for my wife and my babies. Mom and I both looked at him. He looked like he was in his late 20s, and he seemed sincere. Miranda, go back into the store and just use your best judgment, Mom said. I'm going with this man. We finished ramming stuff into the van, and then the three of us went back in. I felt better catching a glimpse of Mrs. Nesbit as we walked in. She was at Gourmet Foods. I guess she figured she might as well go in style. I also found Johnny finishing up at the water section. He seemed to be enjoying himself. I went over to juices and selected juices that were in cans or cartons. In a million years, I never thought we'd be drinking canned juice, but bottles were just too hard to deal with. I also got some of that Last Forever milk. By that point, a lot of the shelves were nearly empty, and people were starting to fight over single boxes of things. There were broken eggs on the floor and spilled liquids, so just walking around was getting tricky. There was still some room in my cart, so I went over to snacks and got a couple of boxes of pretzels. I spotted canned nuts and threw lots of those in. Baked goods seemed pretty empty, so I filled the wagon with cartons of salt and bags of sugar, and, just for the hell of it, a bag of chocolate chips. I threw my 50s to the cashier and made my way to the van. The parking lot was getting nastier, and the rain was still falling hard. Johnny was there, but as soon as Mom showed up, she told both of us to go back in and ransack the shelves for anything we could find. There really wasn't much left in the store, but I managed to fill the cart with lima beans and Brussels sprouts and other end-of-the-world delicacies. When we finally all got into the van, Mom wouldn't let any of us talk until she maneuvered her way out of the lot. By that point, we were too exhausted to make conversation anyway. Mom started driving home. The roads were even worse than they had been. At one point, Johnny and I had to get out of the van and clear a big branch off the road. A couple of other people showed up and helped us, but I was scared until we got back into the van and Mom started driving again. We were halfway home when Mrs. Nesbit said, "Stop at that strip mall." "You think?" Mom said, but she pulled into the parking lot. It was practically empty. "Johnny, you go to the pet supply store," Mrs. Nesbit said. "I'm going to the gift shop. Laura, you go to the nursery."
"Good idea," Mom said. "I'll buy vegetable flats. We'll have fresh produce all summer."
That didn't leave much for me, so I went to the antique store. I don't know why, but then again, I didn't know why Mrs. Nesbit was so insistent on going to the gift shop. It wasn't like Hallmark put out happy end-of-the-world day cards. The great thing about the antique store was I was the only customer. There still wasn't any electricity, and the lightning flashes were still a little too close for comfort, but it was the only place I'd been to in hours that didn't seem like a madhouse. The woman behind the counter even said, "Can I help you?" I didn't want to give away our secret, that we were stocking up for the end of the world, just in case it gave her any ideas,
so I said no thanks and kept looking. I still had $200 in my envelope, so I knew I could buy pretty much anything we needed, if I could only figure out what we might need. Then I saw 3 oil lamps. I grabbed them and went up front. "We have scented oil to go with them if you're interested," the woman said. "I'll take all of them," I told her. "We should be getting electricity back soon," the woman said. "At least that's what I heard on the radio." "My mom is worried," I said. "This'll just make her feel better." The store had an old-fashioned cash register, so she was able to ring up my purchases. I handed over 2 50s and actually got change. I was the first person at the car. I stood there, getting even wetter, until Johnny showed up. "Horton's never going to go hungry," he said. There was hardly room for all the stuff he'd bought, but we rearranged everything we could. Then Mrs. Nesbitt came out, carrying bags and bags. "I bought every candle in the store," she said. "Gift shops always have candles." "Mrs. Nesbitt, you're a genius," I said. "I got oil lamps." "We're both geniuses," she said. We got in the van and waited for Mom. When she showed up, she had 12 flats. I had no idea how we were going to fit them in, but it turned out to be easy. Mrs. Nesbitt sat on my lap, and we used up all her space with flats of tomatoes and cucumbers and string beans and strawberries. "The more we harvest, the longer the canned foods will last," Mom said. "Okay, is there anything anyone didn't buy that we might need?" "Batteries," I said. The transistor radio in the shop had made me think of them. "Matches," Mrs. Nesbitt said. "That convenience store should have them," Mom said. "And it doesn't sell gas, so it should be pretty quiet." She was right. There was only one other car in the lot. Mom bought all their batteries and boxed matches and bars of soap. She even bought a coffee cake and a box of donuts. "Just in case the world ends tomorrow," she said, "we might as well enjoy today." We dropped Mrs. Nesbitt off at her house, and we all carried food and supplies for her. We didn't fuss over which can of soup belonged to who or whether she was entitled to more candles. We just divvied stuff up so that she had plenty. We kept the cat food and the vegetable flats. I made sure she had one of the oil lamps and oil to go with it. It took a long time to get her stuff out, and a longer time to unload the car when we finally got home. Mom got shopping bags, and we filled them and put everything in the dining room, except for the donuts. Those we ate as soon as we were finished. "I'll sort things out later," she said. "Thanks, kids. I never could have done this without you." And then she started crying. That was 2 hours ago. I don't think she stopped crying yet. Chapter 4 May 20th. No school today. The electricity came back on around 4 this morning. It's still dark and cloudy outside, so it felt good to be able to turn lights back on. Horton has been acting like a maniac the past couple of days. He seems to wake up with a start from his naps, and he's been running around all night long, hopping from bedroom to bedroom. He raced onto my bed around midnight and yowled at me, which woke me up, naturally. Then he sniffed my face to make sure it was me. We both fell asleep, but he woke me up again around 2, when he began running through the house, meowing like crazy. Exactly what none of us needs right now. There was an email from Matt waiting for us. He's fine, everything there is fine, although they're having blackouts also, and school remains on schedule. He says it's tricky taking finals with limited light, but the professors all say that'll be taken into account when they're marked. He's still planning to get back here on Wednesday. Mom let Johnny and me each have 30 minutes on the internet. I used part of my time to go to Brandon's fan site. There was a thread where we were all supposed to say where we live and how conditions are. A lot of names were missing. Some of them I know from people who live around New York or on the West Coast. There were 14 PMs waiting for me. 12 people asked how I was and if I'd heard anything about Brandon. The other 2 just asked if I'd heard anything about Brandon. With all that had been going on, I'd forgotten that Brandon's training in LA now. I guess no one has heard from him or seen any reports about him. I posted about how things were in northeastern PA, but added I hadn't seen or heard about Brandon. It's not like I run into his parents or Mrs. Daly every day, but I guess I've made it sound like I'm closer to them than I really am. Or maybe everybody's just desperate to hear how Brandon is, to make sure he's still alive. I've got to believe he is. Mom and Johnny and I spent most of the day putting the food and supplies away. I don't know what Horton's complaining about. Johnny got him enough food to last for years. Mom was almost laughing at herself when she looked at all the food she made us get. With the electricity back on, things seem a lot more normal. And with the day so cloudy, you can't really see the moon hovering. Uh-oh, the lights are flickering. I hope we're not about to lose. May 21st. The president was on TV tonight. He didn't say much that we didn't already know. Tsunamis and floods. Untold numbers of people dead. The moon out of its orbit, etc. Monday is a national day of mourning, and we should all pray a lot. He did say, and he didn't look too happy about it, that we needed to prepare ourselves for even worse. Johnny asked Mom what that could mean, but Mom said she didn't know. But she guessed the president did, only he didn't want to tell us because he was an evil jerk. That was the first normal-sounding thing Mom said in days, and we all laughed. The president said that almost every offshore oil refinery was gone, and that it was believed most of the oil tankers had been lost at sea. I guess that was part of what's going to be worse. Mom said later that didn't just mean oil companies would gouge us, but that there might not be enough gas and oil to heat all the houses in the winter. But I don't think that's true. It's only May now, and there's got to be time to get oil over here. They can't let people freeze to death. When the president finished, he said that the governors of every state would follow, and we should watch to see what our governor had to say. Then the governor came on, and he didn't look too happy about things either. He said there'd be no school throughout the state Monday or Tuesday, but that school should resume on Wednesday, although some districts might not be able to. He said the state was looking into the possibility of rationing gas, but as of the moment, he asked for an honor system. Only get gas if you have less than a quarter tank. He also said that if any gas stations were found to be overcharging, they'd face serious consequences. Mom laughed at that. He didn't know when the blackouts would stop. We weren't alone, he said. Just about every state had reported some power outages. Johnny was upset because the governor didn't say anything about the Phillies and the Pirates. The Phillies were in San Francisco on Wednesday, and no one had mentioned if they made it out okay. Mom said the governor has a lot of things on his mind and a lot of things he has to tell us. But then she paused and said, "You know, he should have told us if the Phillies and the Pirates are okay. I bet the governor of New York told everyone how the Yankees and Mets are." I thought about saying no one makes any announcements about how figure skaters are, but it didn't seem worth the effort. I'll feel better when Matt is home. May 22nd. Johnny asked this afternoon if we could go to McDonald's or someplace. The electricity has been so on and off the past few days that Mom emptied the freezer and we finished everything that was in it. So Mom said we might as well try, and we got in the van and went food hunting. The first thing we noticed was that gas had gone up. It's $7 a gallon now, and there were lines at all the gas stations. "How much gas do we have in the tank?" I asked. "We're okay for a while," Mom said. "But I think we'll switch over to Matt's car next week. This thing gets zero mileage." "When do you think gas prices will go down?" I asked. "They can't stay this high forever." "They'll go up before they go down," Mom said. "We'll have to be very careful about where we drive to. No more hopping in the car and just going someplace."
"I can still go to baseball practice, can't I?" Johnny asked.
"We'll see about carpooling for that," Mom said. "We are all in the same boat here." When we got to the road with McDonald's and Burger King, we saw there was hardly any traffic. We drove up to McDonald's, only it was closed. So were Burger King and KFC and Taco Bell. All the fast food places were closed.
"Maybe they're just closed because it's Sunday," I said.
"Or because tomorrow's a national day of mourning," Johnny said. "They're probably just waiting for the electricity to run full time," Mom said. It felt weird, though, seeing them all closed. The same kind of weird when you see the moon, and it's just a little too big and too bright. I guess I always felt even if the world came to an end, McDonald's would still be open. Mom drove around some more, and we found a local pizza place that was open. The parking lot was jammed, and there were about a dozen people standing outside, just waiting to get in. Mom dropped Johnny and me off, and we got in line. Everybody was pretty friendly, and there was a lot of talk about what places were closed and what were open. The mall was closed, but one of the supermarkets was still open, even though it didn't have much stuff left. Johnny asked if anyone had heard anything about the Phillies, and it turned out one of the guys in line actually had. The Phillies had played a day game on Wednesday, and the game was over before the asteroid hit. They'd taken a charter flight to Colorado, and apparently they were all okay. I asked if anyone knew Brandon's family or Mrs. Daly, just in case anyone had heard anything about Brandon, but no one did. There were a lot of rumors going around, like we should be prepared not to have electricity for the entire summer, and some people had heard that the moon was going to crash into the earth by Christmas. One man said he knew someone on the school board, and they were thinking about canceling the rest of the school year, and all the kids standing in line cheered, Johnny included. I guess as rumors go, that's a lot better than the moon's going to crash into the earth, but I don't think either one is likely to happen. Not that I know what is. By the time Mom got back to us, we were almost in the shop. She looked kind of excited, but she wouldn't tell us why. It took another half hour before we actually got to place our order, and by the time we did, there wasn't much left. But we were able to get a plain pizza and some garlic rolls. I don't think I've ever been so excited about food. We walked back to the car, and when we got in, Mom said she'd found a bakery that was open, and she'd bought cookies and cake and a couple of loaves of bread. Nothing was fresh, but it was still edible. We stopped off at Mrs. Nesbitt's and brought her over for our feast. The electricity was on, so we reheated the pizza and the garlic rolls, and they tasted great. For dessert, we had chocolate cake, and Johnny drank one of those weird never-go-bad milks I'd bought. The rest of us drank ginger ale. Horton hung around, hoping for treats. "This may be the last meal like this we have for a while," Mom said. "We shouldn't count on pizza and burgers and chicken until things get back to normal." "There was rationing during World War II," Mrs. Nesbitt said. "That's probably what they'll do now. We'll pool our ration points and we'll be fine." "I wish I trusted the president," Mom said. "I just can't imagine him handling this." "People rise to the occasion," Mrs. Nesbitt said. "We have, after all." Just then the electricity went off. Only somehow it felt funny, and we all laughed. Mom got out the Monopoly game, and we played until there wasn't enough sunlight left. Mom drove Mrs. Nesbitt home, and I went to my room, where I'm using a combination of candlelight and flashlight to write by. I wonder when we'll get electricity back for good. It's going to be an awfully hot summer without air conditioning. May 23rd. The National Day of Mourning meant that there were memorial services on the radio. Lots of clergy, lots of politicians, lots of sad songs. They're still not giving a number for how many people died, but maybe that's because people are still dying. With so much coastline lost, the oceans keep rolling in and destroying more land and more buildings, and people who didn't want to evacuate or who couldn't because the highways are all jammed have been drowning. Mom says we're still plenty inland and have nothing to worry about. The electricity came on for an hour this afternoon. There was an email from Matt saying he was still planning on getting home Wednesday. I know it's dumb of me, but I keep thinking that once Matt gets home, everything will be okay. Like, he'll push the moon back into place. I wish there was school tomorrow. I keep thinking about cafeteria lunches and how I always complained about them and how much I want to eat one now. May 24th. The electricity came on around 9 this morning, and Mom grabbed Johnny and me and we drove around looking for any stores that might be open. We did find one supermarket that was open, only it just had school supplies and pet toys and mops. It was so strange, walking around this big store and seeing all those empty shelves. There were only a couple of employees there, and a security guard, although I can't imagine what he was protecting. Mom didn't think we'd be hungry enough to eat pencils, so we left without buying anything. A lot of the appliance stores had boarded up windows. There was broken glass in the parking lots, so I guess they'd been looted. I don't know why, since there isn't any electricity to run the flat-screen TVs, or anything else for that matter. It was funny seeing which stores were still open. The really expensive shoe store had boarded up windows, but it was open. Mom said the world might be coming to an end, but she still wasn't going to pay $100 for a pair of sneakers. The sporting goods store was closed, and its window was boarded up, and someone had painted in giant letters, "No more guns or rifles." Mom still has cash left, and I could tell she wanted to buy something. She started to look at all the soups and vegetables and peroxide at home and feel proud of herself. We finally found a clothes store that was open. There was a cashier, but no one else. It was the kind of store we never go to ordinarily, small and not well lit, and everything looked dingy. Mom bought 2 dozen pairs of socks and underwear. She asked if they had any gloves, and when the cashier found them hidden away in a drawer, Mom bought 5 pairs. Then she got this scary, "I just had a brilliant idea" look that I've noticed more and more the past few days, and asked if they had any thermal underwear. I practically died of embarrassment, and Johnny didn't look too happy either. But when the cashier dug out the long johns, Mom bought them too. The cashier got into it then and started pulling out scarves and mittens and winter hats. Mom went berserk and bought everything, whether it would fit any of us or not. "You could open your own store now," the cashier said, which was probably her way of saying, "Thank God I found someone even crazier than I am, and maybe she'll buy everything and I can go home." We carried bagloads of stuff back to the van. "What are we going to do with kids' mittens?" I asked Mom. "Give them to Lisa for her baby?" "You're right," Mom said. "Baby things. I should have remembered." And she went right back into the store, and when she came out, she had armloads of baby shirts and baby overalls and baby socks and even a baby coat. "No brother or sister of yours is going to go cold this winter," she said. That was kind of sweet of her, but I think she's gone crazy. I know Lisa, and she'd never want a baby of hers to wear the clothes that store was selling. Actually, it should be kind of funny to see Mom make the big presentation to Lisa and Dad. I guess she'll do it when she picks up Johnny at baseball camp and takes us to Dad's for August. Of course, by then, Lisa's parents will have visited, and the baby will have enough clothes for a lifetime. And their mom will be handing over all those socks and things, and Lisa will be trying to act like she's grateful. Maybe if the store stays open, Mom will be able to return all the stuff. I know I don't plan on wearing long johns next winter. May 25th. Mom and Matt should have been home by now. We have electricity, so Johnny's watching a DVD, but he's nervous too. It was a long, weird day, and it's already feeling like a long, weird night. For the first time in a week, the sky is completely clear, and you can really see the moon. It's so big and bright it feels like we don't need lights on, but we have them all on anyway, just about every light in the house. I don't know why Johnny and I feel like having them all on, but we do. School started again today, and that didn't make things feel right, like I thought it would. The bus was only about half full. Megan was on, but she was sitting with her church friends, so we just said hello. Sammy was nowhere to be seen. It's funny how over the past few days I haven't felt like calling them. The phones worked most of the time, but we haven't gotten many phone calls, or made many. It's like we were so occupied with taking care of ourselves, we didn't feel we could handle anybody else's lives. School looked exactly the same as it did last week, but it didn't feel the same. There were a lot of absentees, and a lot of teachers were missing too, and there weren't substitutes for them. So classrooms doubled up and we all had extra study halls. No one had done any homework since last week, and no one seemed to know what we should be doing. Some of my teachers had us doing our regular work, and others had us talking about what was going on. It was funny, what we'd talk about and what we wouldn't. Mom told Johnny and me not to tell anyone about how we'd practically bought out the supermarket last week. She says it's better if people don't know what we have stored away. Like someone is going to break into the kitchen and steal our cans of soup. Or the long johns. Or the 2 dozen bags of kitty litter. I don't know if other people weren't saying what their mothers had bought, but a lot of kids didn't seem to be saying a lot of things, if that makes any sense. Instead of fifth period, we went to the auditorium. Usually, we have to have 2 assemblies, because we wouldn't all fit otherwise. But there were so many kids absent, there was room for all of us. It wasn't really an assembly, not the kind with a program anyway. Mrs. Sanchez stood on the stage and made announcements. She started by saying how grateful we should be that we were all safe and sound, and she thanked all the teachers for everything they'd done, which was pretty funny, seeing as so many of them weren't there. Then she talked about how what had happened wasn't just a local crisis, even though we might feel that way, since we didn't have electricity we could count on, and McDonald's wasn't open. She smiled when she said that, like it was supposed to be a joke. But nobody laughed. "This is a crisis the whole world is going through together," she said. "I have complete faith in our ability as Pennsylvanians and Americans to be able to pull through." A few kids laughed at that, even though we obviously weren't supposed to. Then she got to the part about how we were all going to have to make sacrifices. Like we haven't been making sacrifices for a week already. Like the supermarkets were miraculously going to reopen and gas wasn't going to cost $9 a gallon. There would be no more after-school activities. The class play, the prom, the senior trip all were canceled. The swimming pool was no longer available. The cafeteria would no longer serve hot lunches. Starting on Tuesday, there'd be no more bus service for the high school. It's funny. When she said the stuff about the prom, a lot of kids started yelling, and I thought what babies they were. But when she said the pool was closed, I yelled, "No!" And by the time she'd told us about no more buses, pretty much all the kids were yelling and booing. She just let us. I guess she knew we couldn't be stopped. When the bell rang, she got off the stage, and the teachers all told us to go to our next class, which we mostly did. Some kids went into the classrooms, though, and started breaking windows. I saw cops come in and drag kids out. I don't think anyone was hurt. I really missed Sammy at lunch. Megan joined me, though. Her eyes were all bright and shiny, kind of the way moms have been getting when she sees something else to stockpile. "This is the first time in a week that I've left Reverend Marshall," she said. "We've been sleeping at the church, just getting an hour or two of sleep each day so we can keep praying. Isn't it wonderful what God is doing?" There was a part of me that wanted to tell Megan to shut up, and another part of me that wanted to hear what God was doing that was so wonderful. But mostly, I wanted a hot lunch. "What does your mom say about all this?" I asked. Megan's mom used to like Reverend Marshall, but she's never been as crazy about him as Megan. "She doesn't understand," Megan said. "She's a good woman, really she is, but she lacks faith. I pray for her soul, just the way I pray for yours." "Megan," I said, like I was trying to grab the friend I'd loved for years and bring her back to reality. "There are no more hot lunches. Half the time there's no electricity. I live 5 miles from school, and gas costs $9 a gallon, and we can't use the pool anymore." "Those are just earthly concerns," Megan said. "Miranda, admit your sins and embrace our Lord. You won't care about hot lunches and the cost of gas in heaven." She could be right. The problem is, I don't see Mom or Dad or Lisa or Matt, especially Matt. I think he's a Buddhist these days. Or Johnny admitting their sins and embracing anybody, even if it means a ticket to heaven. And I don't much want to be in heaven if they're not there with me. Okay, I could manage without Lisa. I considered trying to explain that to Megan, but it would have been like trying to explain to Mom that I wasn't going to wear long johns no matter what the moon did to us. So I left Megan and went to where the swim team was and groaned and moaned along with them. Dan said he heard from his mother, who knows just about all the coaches in the area, that all the schools in Pennsylvania have closed their pools, and so have the ones near us in New York. It's because without electricity, the filters can't run, and without the filters, the water isn't sanitary. So no more meets for the time being. Karen mentioned the pool at the Y, but a couple of the kids said the Y was closed. The town has a pool, but it's outdoors and it isn't heated, and even if they have it working, it won't do us much good until the end of June. So I mentioned Miller's Pond. There were actually kids who didn't know about it. I guess they live in the new developments and don't know about things at my end of town. It's still too cold to be swimming at the pond, but once it warms up enough, it's all natural and doesn't need a filter, and it's pretty big. So we agreed we'd start swimming at Miller's Pond weekend after next. I guess that gives me something to look forward to, and I think Dan was impressed that I came up with a solution. Now if I could only solve the hot lunch situation. It's amazing how much I miss the cafeteria macaroni and cheese. "I hear Matt and Mom! Matt's home!" May 28th. Things seem so much better now that Matt is home. He's been throwing batting practice to Johnny. I've been catching, and that makes Johnny happy. He and Mom went through everything in the house, all the food we bought, and all kinds of stuff Mom's grandparents had hidden away in the attic and cellar, yarn and a crochet hook. Mom says she hasn't crocheted in years, but she thinks it'll all come back to her if she works at it. And mason jars, and canning equipment, and a manual can opener, and an egg beater, and the sorts of things kitchens had in the olden days. He and Mom spent all day yesterday organizing the food, so we know how much tuna we have and how many canned peaches. I think we have enough stuff to last forever, but Mom says she'll be relieved when the supermarkets open again. Just to hear her say she thinks they will cheers me up. Matt and I haven't had a chance for a real talk yet. He doesn't really know any more than I do about what happened and what's going to happen, but I still feel like if I hear it from him, I'll believe it more. School was better by Thursday. A lot more kids showed up, including Sammy, and more of the teachers, too. The high school is 5 miles from here, which Mom says is walkable on a nice day. Johnny's lost his bus service to the middle school, and that's a little farther away, so Mom's been trying to work out a carpool. Matt got out all our bikes, and he's spending the weekend getting them in shape. I used to bike a lot, and I guess it's as good a way as any to get around. I'll certainly get to school faster by bike than by foot. Peter showed up this evening, which was a nice surprise, especially for Mom. He brought us a bag of apples that one of his patients had given him. He and Mom couldn't go out anywhere, so the two of them baked an apple crisp for all of us. We had pasta with marinara sauce for, like, the 10th time this week, so the hot dessert was a treat. Matt got Mrs. Nesbitt, so it was really an event, 6 for dinner, with a main course and a dessert. Of course, by the time we were ready to eat, the electricity had gone out again. It was out most of the day, but we're used to that by now. We had electricity for an hour during school yesterday, and it was like none of us knew what to do about it. At home, when the electricity goes on, we rush to the TV and turn it on. We could listen to the radio all the time, but Mom wants us to preserve batteries, so we only listen in the morning and in the late evening. It's such a weird way to live. I just can't believe it's going to stay like this much longer. On the other hand, I'm already starting to forget what normal life felt like. Clocks that were on time, and lights that went on with the flick of a switch. And internet, and streetlights, and supermarkets, and McDonald's, and... One thing Matt did say to me was that no matter what the future is, we're living through a very special time in history. He said that history makes us who we are, but we can make history also, and that anyone can be a hero if they just choose to be. Matt's always been my hero, and I think it's a lot harder to be one than he's saying, but basically I know what he means. But I still miss ice cream and swimming laps and feeling comfortable looking at the night sky. May 29th. The electricity came on this morning around 9, and Mom did what she always does when we realize it's back on. She started a load of laundry. It was only on for about 15 minutes, and it stayed off all the rest of today. About 10 minutes ago, we all woke up because of this strange roaring sound. We all raced toward the sound, which turned out to be the washing machine going back on. Who knew the rinse cycle could be so scary? Mom says she's staying up until the clothes can go in the dryer. She doesn't think the electricity will stay on long enough to dry the clothes completely, but she figures it's worth a shot. I really wish we had electricity at 2 p.m. rather than at 2 a.m., but I guess I should think of Mom as a hero of the all-night laundry. May 30th. I don't always know how long the power has been off. It went on in the middle of the night, but by the time I woke up this morning, it was off again. We're spending more and more time outdoors, just because it's nicer outside and the sun provides natural light. We're all used to seeing the moon now, so that isn't bothering us like it used to. But we leave a light on in the living room window, so when the electricity does come back on, we can go inside and do what we need to do. Today it came on around 1, and we raced in. Mom went on the internet, which kind of surprised me. Usually she vacuums or starts a load of laundry. She's given up changing the time on the clocks. But this afternoon, she skipped all that and went to the internet. She had heard on the radio this morning that they were starting to list the names of the dead. She found the names of most of the editors she worked with, and her agent, and a lot of writers she'd met over the years. She found two friends from college, and one friend from a long time ago before we moved here, and Dad's best man and his family. She also found a couple of second cousins and their kids. In less than 10 minutes, she found over 30 names. But one good thing. She checked on Mrs. Nesbitt's son and daughter-in-law and their kids, and didn't find them on any list. I asked her to look up Brandon, and she did, but couldn't find him. Of course, there are still millions of people unaccounted for, but at least there's still hope he's alive. I don't get to go on the board very much, but when I do, no one seems to have heard anything. I can't help thinking that's a good sign. There were names of people I know that I could have looked up. Kids I went to summer camp with, and kids I know from swimming, and old friends from elementary school who moved to New York or California or Florida. But I didn't try to find them. They weren't everyday parts of my life anyway, and it feels wrong somehow to find out if they're dead when I didn't much think about them while they were living. Johnny looked up baseball players. A lot of them were listed as known dead, and a lot more were listed as missing slash presumed dead. Matt looked up kids from his high school class. Only 3 were listed as dead, but a bunch were listed as missing slash presumed dead. As a test, he looked us up, but none of our names were on any of the lists. And that's how we know we're alive this Memorial Day. May 31st. The first day without bus service. So naturally, it poured. It wasn't scary rain like it was that other time. No big thunderstorm, no tornado winds. Just good, old-fashioned, pouring rain. Matt ended up driving Johnny and me to school. Mom stayed home to take advantage of electricity and work on her book. I hadn't really thought about how hard it must be for Mom to get any writing done without a computer. Or without an agent, or editors or publishers. Over half the kids were absent, and Johnny says there were even fewer kids at the middle school. Most of our teachers were there, though, and we actually got a lot of work done. And we had electricity until nearly 2, so even though it was dark outside, the school was really kind of cheerful. Empty, but cheerful. When Johnny came home today, he told us they'd announced that all standardizing testing had been canceled. I've begun wondering what they're going to do about our finals, which should start in 2 weeks. We haven't really gotten any schoolwork done, and no one is assigning homework because there's never any way of knowing if there'll be any light to work by. Peter said over the weekend that he'd heard a rumor that they might just close school next week and promote all of us and hope things are back to normal by September. I don't know if I want that or not. Except the part about back to normal by September. I know I want that. Chapter 5. June 2nd. We all got notices at school today to take home. It said there would be no final exams this semester, and our grades would reflect only those tests we'd taken before May 19th. We'd be told what our grades are tomorrow in class. If we wanted to raise our average in a course, we were to talk to our teacher next week and see if there was a way of doing that. School would officially close on June 10th and reopen on August 31st, unless we heard otherwise. They're still planning to have graduation, though. Outdoors, with a rain date. It feels weird to think there aren't going to be any finals, but it's not like I've been studying for them. It's not like I've done any schoolwork in weeks. I feel bad for kids who are on the cusp, though. One good grade and they won't flunk the course. Sammy, for one. I know she's been just below passing in French all year, and I've seen her cram for a final and ace it, which was probably what she planned on doing this year. She probably doesn't care, though. Actually, except for some of the really bright Ivy League types, I doubt anyone cares. June 3rd. I got my grades, and they're all pretty much as I expected. My math grade was dragged down by those stupid tests, or by those tests where I was stupid, so I know I'm going to have to talk to Mom this weekend about what to do. All they served for lunch today was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on stale white bread. We each were allowed one sandwich. I don't want to whine about being hungry, because I know compared to a lot of kids, I'm eating okay. For breakfast, we have cereal with powdered milk. It doesn't taste the same as real milk, but it's still something, and it's thanks to Mom, who bought boxes of the stuff on crazy shopping day. And even if I'm sick of tuna or pasta or canned chicken, I can't say we're not eating supper. So it's not exactly the end of the world for me if lunch consists of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I know I should be grateful we're getting that much. Everyone knows the reason school is closing so early is because they're running out of food for us and they don't know what to do about it. I had lunch with Megan and Sammy and Dave and Brian and Jenna. Megan didn't eat with her church group, which was a nice change of pace. Half the swim team wasn't at school. We stood in line and got our sandwiches, and people were griping and moaning, and it wasn't very pleasant. We went to our table, and even though we should have nibbled on our sandwiches to make them feel like a full meal, we gulped them down. 3 bites and 25 minutes to kill. Except for Megan. She tore her sandwich in 2 roughly equal parts and took dainty lady bites. She finished her half sandwich in more time than it took us to eat our whole ones, and then she asked if anyone wanted the other part of her sandwich. Everyone, except me, said yes. She looked around the table and gave the half sandwich to Dave. I have no idea why she picked him, but he didn't ask. He just ate his half sandwich fast, before anyone else had a chance to get to it. I don't know why this bothers me, but it does. June 4th. Mom and I discussed my grades. I'll be getting a 95 in English, a 94 in history, a 90 in French, a 91 in biology, and a 78 in math. I could ask to retake a math test, I said. If I do well on the test, I'd at least pull my grade up to an 80. What's the point? Mom said. I was so glad she wasn't mad. I just said okay and changed the subject. But this evening it hit me. I found Matt and we sat outside under the bean tree. Mom calls it a big weed, but it's so beautiful when it flowers, and it's the last tree to lose its leaves in the fall, so I love it. Matt, does Mom think we're all going to die? I asked. I could never ask her that, because I know she'd lie if she did. Matt was quiet for longer than I would have liked. What I wanted him to do was laugh and say of course not and everything was going to be okay once they got the electrical systems back online and figured out a way of getting oil here so the trucks could start transporting food again. Mom's concerned, he said instead. We all are. That we're going to die? I asked, and my voice got shrill. Like, we're going to starve to death or something? I don't think Mom's worried we're going to starve to death, he said. She has the garden going, and we still have plenty of canned goods. Everything could be back to normal by this fall, maybe a little sooner, maybe a little later. We're okay for food until then if the garden stays healthy. And even if things don't get exactly back to normal, that doesn't mean things won't improve. Mom's an optimist, and so am I. So why did she say it doesn't matter about my math grade? I asked. When has Mom ever not cared about our grades? Matt laughed. Is that what this is all about? He asked. Matt, this isn't funny, I said. I'm not a kid, but Mom's more likely to talk to you than to me. What does she think is going to happen? You're with her all day. She's got to be talking to you. Right now, her main concern is Johnny and baseball camp, he said. She wants Johnny to have as normal a summer as possible. Who knows what next summer will be like? And... He paused for a moment. Look, this is strictly between you and me, okay? I nodded. If Johnny's at camp, then Mom doesn't have to feed him, Matt said. And when you and Johnny spend August with Dad, Mom won't have to feed either of you. Mom's eating less already. She doesn't have breakfast, and she only eats lunch if I make her, which I do about half the time. With school letting out 2 weeks early, that means lunch for you and Johnny for 2 extra weeks. Right now, that's more important to Mom than your math grade. I couldn't say anything. I looked at the sky. Sunset was just beginning. That used to be my favorite time of day. But now at sunset, the moon is so large it looks like it's about to hit us. I almost never look at the sky anymore. Look, Matt said, and he grabbed my hand and held it. If things get back to normal, no college in the world is going to care about your 78. They'll know how crazy things were this spring. A 78 in 10th grade math won't keep you from getting into college. And if things don't get back to normal? I asked. Then it won't matter anyway, he said. Promise me you won't tell Mom what we talked about. I promise, I said. And don't start skipping meals, he said. We need you to be strong, Miranda. I promise, I said. But I can't help thinking that I'm not strong. Would I give up food for Johnny if it comes to that? Is that what Megan did at lunch on Friday? Will things ever be normal again? June 5th. Mrs. Nesbitt drove over around 5 today. I don't remember the last time I saw her look that happy or excited. Even a visit from Mrs. Nesbitt is something different these days. The electricity is out pretty much all day, and most of the night, so it's not like we can watch TV or go online. There isn't any homework to do, and no one feels like socializing. I have a wonderful treat, she said, and she carried in a bowl covered with a dish towel. We crowded around to see what she had to show us. She pulled away the towel, like a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat, but all we saw were washcloths. She laughed at the expressions on our faces. Then she carefully unwrapped the washcloths, and there were 2 eggs. They weren't very big, but they were still the most beautiful eggs I've ever seen. Where did you find them? Mom asked. One of my old students brought them to me, Mrs. Nesbitt said. Wasn't that sweet of him? He has a farm about 10 miles out of town, and he still has feed for his chickens, so they're still laying. He brought 2 eggs to me and to a few other people. He said he has enough for his family if they're careful, and they decided we might like a special treat. I couldn't possibly enjoy them by myself. Eggs. Real, honest to goodness, actual eggs. I touched one, just to remind myself of what an eggshell felt like. First, Mom took 2 potatoes and an onion and chopped them up and fried them in olive oil. Just the smell of fried potatoes and onions was enough to make us giddy. While they were cooking, we discussed all possible egg dishes. By a vote of 4-1, we picked scrambled. We stood around and watched as Mom put in some powdered milk and beat those eggs. Of course, we don't have any butter, and we decided against cooking oil, so Mom used a little spray-on stuff and a nonstick pan. We each took equal amounts of the eggs and potatoes and onions. I watched Mom to make sure she didn't cheat herself of any. We got a couple of teaspoons worth of scrambled egg, and we nibbled to make it last longer. Then Matt jumped up and said he also had a special treat he had been saving, but tonight seemed like as good a time as any. He ran to his room, and when he came back, he had a chocolate bar. I found this in my bag when I unpacked, he said. I don't know how old it is, but chocolate doesn't go bad. So we each had a piece of chocolate for dessert. I'd almost forgotten how much I love chocolate, how there's something about it that makes life a little more wonderful. After supper, we sat around and sang. None of us has much of a voice, and we didn't all know the same songs, but Horton was our only audience, and he didn't mind. We sang for more than an hour, and we laughed, and Mrs. Nesbitt told us stories about Mom when she was a little girl. It almost felt like we were happy again. June 6th. At lunch today, Megan did the same business with her PB&J sandwich. This time, she gave her second half to Sammy. If she keeps it up, she'll be the most popular girl in high school. I waited for her after school and yanked her away from her church friends. Why aren't you eating all your lunch? I asked. I'm not hungry, she said. I love Megan, and she isn't fat, but I've seen her pack away double burgers and extra fries with a milkshake. I looked at her, really looked at her, and noticed she'd lost weight, maybe 10 pounds. The thing is, we're all losing weight, so it's easier not to notice. It's kind of like the moon. If I don't look, I can pretend it's still the same. Are you eating at all? I asked her. Of course I am, Megan said. I just don't need to eat much anymore. God sustains me. Food doesn't. So why are you even eating half your sandwich? I asked. I don't know why. It wasn't a rational question, so there was no reason to expect a rational answer. I figured people wouldn't notice if I ate half, she said. They notice, I said. I notice. It's only for a couple more days, she said. Next week, no one will see what I'm eating and what I'm not. They can't possibly be telling you at your church not to eat, I said. Megan gave me one of those pitying looks that always make me want to slug her. Reverend Marshall doesn't have to tell us how much to eat, she said. He trusts us to hear God's voice.
So God's the one telling you not to eat? I said. What, he called you up and said, split the peanut butter and jelly sandwich with the poor unfortunates?
I'm starting to think you're the poor unfortunate, Megan said.
And I'm starting to think you're crazy, I said. That's something I've been thinking for a while now, but haven't said out loud.
Why? Megan asked, and for a moment, she really was angry, like she used to get when we were 12. But then she bowed her head, closed her eyes, and moved her lips. In prayer, I guess.
What? I said.
I begged God for forgiveness, she said. And if I were you, Miranda, I'd ask for divine forgiveness also.
God doesn't want you to starve to death, I said. How can you believe in a God that would ask that of you?
But he isn't asking, she said.
Honestly, Miranda, you're making an awfully big deal over half a sandwich.
Promise me you won't stop eating, I said. Megan smiled, and I think that was what scared me the most.
I'll get my sustenance as God wishes me to, she said. There are lots of different ways of being hungry, you know. Some people are hungry for food, and others are hungry for God's love. She gave me a look then, pure Megan, to let me know which camp I fell into.
Eat your sandwich tomorrow, I said. Indulge me. If you insist on starving, at least wait until Saturday when I won't have to watch.
You don't have to watch now, she said, and walked away from me to join her church friends again. June 7th. I dreamed last night of Becky. She was in heaven, which looked an awful lot like the Jersey Shore, the way I remember it from summers ago, when the tides behaved themselves and the Atlantic was the world's most glorious swimming pool. Becky looked like she had before she got sick, with those long blonde braids. I was always so jealous of her hair when we were young.
Is this heaven? I asked her.
Yes, it is, she said. Only then she closed a giant gate, so I was on one side and she and the ocean were on the other. Let me in, I said. Did Megan tell you not to let me into heaven? Becky laughed. I haven't thought about Becky's laugh in a long time. She used to giggle all the time, and whenever she did, she'd get me laughing. Sometimes we'd laugh for 5 straight minutes with no idea what we were laughing about.
It's not Megan's fault, she said. It's yours.
What did I do wrong? I asked. Well, whined, really. Even in my sleep, I thought I could have worded it better.
You can't enter heaven because you're not dead, Becky said.
You're not good enough to be dead.
I will be, I promise, I said, and then I woke up. I was shaking the dream disturbed me so much. It wasn't like it was a nightmare. It was just, I don't know. I don't know the words to describe what it felt like to be locked out of heaven, to be so desperate that I longed to die.
School is a complete waste of time. The only classes I have are English and history. All my other teachers have vanished. In English, Mr. Clifford reads out loud, short stories and poems. Ms. Hamish tries to put things in historic perspective for us, but half the time someone in class starts crying. I haven't cried in school yet, but I've come awfully close. When we're not in class, we wander around the school building and exchange rumors. One kid said he knew where there was a Dairy Queen still in business, but he wouldn't tell us where. Another kid said she heard that we were never getting electricity back, that the scientists were working on perfecting solar energy. And of course, lots of kids say the moon's getting closer and closer to Earth, and we'll all be dead by Christmas. Sammy seems convinced of that. At lunch today, Megan tore her sandwich in two and gave half of it to Sammy and half to Michael. She looked at me when she did and winked. June 8th. Lately, I've been trying not to know what's going on. At least that's the excuse I've been giving myself for not caring about all the stuff that's happening outside of my little section of Pennsylvania. Who cares about earthquakes in India or Peru or even Alaska? Okay, that's not fair. I know who cares. Matt cares, and Mom cares, and if there were any baseball players involved, Johnny would care too. Knowing Dad, he cares. Mrs. Nesbitt, too. I'm the one not caring. I'm the one pretending the earth isn't shattering all around me because I don't want it to be. I don't want to know there was an earthquake in Missouri.
I don't want to know the Midwest can die. Also, that what's going on isn't just tides and tsunamis. I don't want to have anything more to be afraid of. I didn't start this diary for it to be a record of death. June 9th. The next to last day of school. Whatever that means. One day this week when we had electricity, someone took advantage of it to print a few hundred flyers, telling us if we wanted to bring in blankets and food and clothes for the people in need in New York and New Jersey, we should do so on Friday. I liked getting that sheet. I liked the idea of helping someone. I guess we can't get stuff down to the people in Missouri because gas is up to $12 a gallon, and there aren't that many gas stations still open. I put the sheet in front of Mom, who was sitting at the kitchen table staring out the window. She's been doing that more and more lately. Not that there's much else she can be doing. The flyer caught her eye. She read it all the way through, then picked it up, and tore it into two pieces, then four, then eight. "We're not giving anything away," she said. For a moment, I really wondered if she was my mother and not some pod person who'd taken over her body. Mom is always the first to give stuff away. She's the queen of food drives and blood drives and teddy bears for foster kids. I love that about her, although I know I'll never be half as generous as she is. "Mom," I said, "we can spare a blanket or two." "How do you know that?" she asked. "How can you possibly know what we're going to need this winter?" "This winter?" I said. "Everything will be back to normal by winter." "And what if it isn't?" she said. "What if we can't get any heating oil? What if the only thing that keeps us from freezing to death is a single blanket, only we don't happen to have it because we gave it away in June?" "Heating oil?" I said. I felt like a total idiot, only able to parrot her. "There'll be heating oil by winter." "I hope you're right," she said. "But in the meantime, we're not giving anything away to anybody who isn't family." "If Mrs. Nesbit felt that way, we wouldn't have shared her eggs," I said. "Mrs. Nesbit is family," Mom said. "The poor unfortunates of New York and New Jersey can get their own damn blankets." "Okay," I said. "I'm sorry I brought it up." That was the moment when Mom was supposed to snap back to herself, when she was supposed to apologize and say the stress was getting to her. Only she didn't. Instead, she went back to staring out the window. I tracked Matt down, which wasn't hard since there's nothing for him to do either. He was lying on his bed, staring at the ceiling. "I guess that's what I'll be doing starting next week." "Heating oil," I said to him. "Oh," he said. "You know about that?" I wasn't sure whether to say yes or no, so I just stood there and shrugged. "I'm surprised Mom told you," he said. "She must figure if we can't get any, you'll find out by fall anyway." "We can't get any heating oil?" I said. "Just call me Miss Parrot." "So she didn't tell you," he said. "How'd you find out?" "How are we going to survive without heating oil?" I asked. Matt sat up and faced me. "First of all, maybe the oil reserves will be back by fall," he said, "in which case we'll pay whatever it costs and get the oil. Second, people survived for millions of years without heating oil. If they could, we can. We have a wood stove. We'll use that." "One wood stove," I said, "that keeps the sunroom heated, and maybe the kitchen. And that's going to leave us a lot better off than people without a wood stove," he said. It seemed silly even to me to suggest electric heat. "How about natural gas?" I asked. "Practically everyone in town heats with natural gas. The gas company supplies it. Couldn't we convert the furnace to gas?" Matt shook his head. "Mom already spoke to someone at the gas company. They're making no guarantees about having any gas next winter. We're lucky we have the wood stove." "This is ridiculous," I said. "It's June. It's 85 degrees outside. How can anybody possibly know what it's going to be like in the winter? Maybe the moon will warm things up. Maybe the scientists will figure out how to turn rocks into oil. Maybe we'll all have moved to Mexico." Matt smiled. "Maybe," he said. "But in the meantime, don't tell Johnny, okay? I'm still not sure how you figured it out, but Mom doesn't want any of us to worry any more than we have to." "How much do we have to?" I asked. But Matt didn't answer. He went back to staring at the ceiling instead. I went to the linen closet and counted our blankets. Then I went outside and waited for the warmth of the sun to stop me from shivering.